You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this bright, sunshiny day here in Southern California. We have a great conversation ahead of us today. We're going to be talking with Greg Witt, who's a youth marketing strategist and a generational expert who's worked with major brands around the country. And he and his partner have written a book called The Gen Z Frequency, How Brands Tune In and Build Credibility. So welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405, Greg.
Hey, glad to be here.
So I want to talk today about this whole notion of generations and talk about how brands have to change, because when you look around and you think about brands, especially social service brands like the Rotary Club,
right,
Kiwanis Club, you think about the mainstream church, all of these institutions that made significant contributions in the 50s, the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and now every one of them is struggling with empty seats. So I want to spend some time today talking about it. So you tell us, how do you want to get into this?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the generations of you know, from the baby boomers to Gen Z today, there are so many differences, and then at the same time there are so many different similarities, and largely it's the tools, the technologies, you know, that change. You know, the life stages are, you know, the mindset of each life stage is generally the same, right? I don't think humans have radically evolved yet. I mean, I could be wrong. I'm not sure, like, where you want to go.
Well, I mean, we're looking at changes in just these empty seats. Now, what is it? I mean, it's not a matter, I don't think it's a matter of simply putting the Rotary Club onto a YouTube stream. There's something different there. Where's the loss of value, and do these organizations have any value for Gen Z?
I do think that they have value. I think when it comes to communications, I have friends at the Rotary, and all these organizations are great, but I think when we look at legacy, you know, these brands, these organizations that have been along, like you said, the church, you said all these, I think a lot of it is the relevance, like, I'm trying to get to the right words. It's like, they've been disconnected from potentially the right channels and the right approaches and the right types of content and ways to actually communicate with the consumer or the audience. I think that they've slowly gotten out of touch.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore the catch up, for them to catch up and then specifically start understanding how to use social media more effectively, you know, even just how to get the message right more effectively, is something they have a lot of catching up to do. Like, I'm trying to think of a good example. It's not that the causes themselves are relevant. The causes are perhaps, for the younger generation, more relevant than ever before. So I do think that a lot of it is having, not necessarily changing their identity, but making sure that the way that they're communicating their identity in a way that young people care about, but then they also have to see it. I don't think there's any authenticity issues, like, right? Because every different organization that could fall within that realm is very, very different. There is also something, because, you know, younger generations just clearly don't know everything. You know, what even some of these organizations are, who they are. So the Rotary or you said Kiwanis, I mean, I think they're using kind of a lot of these different organizations, right, have to make sure that the way that they're speaking is something that's clearly resonating with those audiences. And then they have to rebuild trust.
Mm-hmm.
And not necessarily that they've done anything to need to repair trust. So it's very different in that.
It's a really matter of building trust.
Building trust, right? Because, and I think, you know, I don't know, I don't think, we have to build trust in an ongoing capacity, right? Mm-hmm. Trust is earned. Trust is, you know, comes through action. But we need to have that identity, then we need to build that trust, and then we need to get to relevance. So we have to make sure that we're highly relevant with the right messages at the right time, the right places that we're communicating at, the right people that are involved to help influence the message and get people to have, you know, a real true desire to feel that it's like them, and then to become a part of it. Because young people want to change the way things are today. They want to be contributors. And I think, so if you take a step back, I'll just say young people. I don't want to necessarily stereotype between, you know, Gen X, millennials, or Gen Z. But I can say that Gen Z in particular are very passionate and seek actionable means to make something happen. Right. So
I'm seeing here. I mean, you mentioned three things: identity. I mean, it sounds like this might be in sequence: building a clear identity, developing trust, and then showing relevance.
Yeah.
But now, what I'm seeing is that there's two pieces. One is getting things done, and that can be done. I mean, what is that? What do we call a crowd that comes together?
Crowdsourcing?
Well, no, not crowdsourcing, but when you have a group that joins for immediate experience.
A party? No, I'm kidding.
No, it's like a party, but it's like, we're going to go out and do this here, show up at 2 o'clock in this place.
Like a movement.
Like a movement, yes, but we get together,
like clean
we do
up,
that, and then we're gone.
Okay.
Right? We can get things done that way. Build a coalition, build a team, go out and do it. Now, that's one thing.
It's not sustainable, though.
Well, I understand. The other is building, I mean, for lack of a better word, building a community.
Right.
Building a community of interest where the next time an issue comes up, we're ready to move. But it's not just issues. It seems to me that there's another part that social groups like Rotary, like the church, and many other ones, nurturing, building, training, helping people to see new opportunities. There's a sense of growth there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Where does that happen today?
Where does that sense of belonging happen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that sense of belonging happens when you're standing out front of Supreme waiting for the next product to drop. Mm-hmm. No, I'm serious, but I'm kidding. I think it comes together with when you're, you know, passionate about the same things. You're like, you know, you're going to get together with like-minded people. Like, where does it actually happen? I mean, it takes place largely on social media platforms, but in the most profound way, it happens in the real world,
mm-hmm.
right? It happens at a skate park. It happens, you know, where people are playing video games. You know, it happens in the living room. It happens on Xbox, where they're really intimately sharing these experiences, you know, verbally and at events. Obviously, it happens at concerts. You know, music is huge. There's so many different, you know, ways that, and again, I don't think that, you know, that Xbox and talking on an Xbox in your house is something new, but I don't think that a lot of these ways, these means to bring people together are new either. Mm-hmm. There's just so many different choices, and it gets confusing and it gets overwhelming for people, I think, to make their decisions.
Well, to some degree, what I see is that there has been a tremendous commercialization of community.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And the power of that commercial interest is overwhelming. I mean, what can a Rotary Club do in the face of the kind of tsunami of opportunities that are there? I mean, I can't come because I have to get my son to school in the morning, and I can't come because we got to play soccer on Sunday morning.
We're all time starved, worse than ever before.
Well, we're time starved to me. We're time starved because of this overwhelming number of opportunities and the astounding ability of advertising to influence us and distract us and to say, come here. And whether coming there gives me what I'm looking for or not, I've spent my time.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's there's an infinite amount of opportunities. You're just a swipe away from being, I don't know if to say irrelevant, but you're a swipe away from being non-existent at the moment.
Well, and to me, there to some degree, that is where the church is, right? I mean, I can show you church after church, which is a great churches 20, 30, 40 years ago, which now are, you know, have maybe 20, 30 older members, and you can look forward 20 years, and if they continue doing the same thing, the most significant thing will be burying those 20 people.
Yeah, no, it's interesting for me because you've really got me on the spot with something because it's not something that I've thought about a lot, but it's true. I mean, a lot of the churches that are super successful have, you know, worked incredibly hard to build community. Mm-hmm. They have made their campuses, if you will, if you want to call them campuses, but like, you know, that's obviously talks to a larger organization, but they've just made the music and the vibe and the style really communicate.
I mean, it's a Disneyland.
I mean, or like something, you know, that's a bit extreme, but I think what you're saying is
well,
like it's certainly a super cool place to
go. Certainly learn from Disneyland. I mean, I'm not saying it is Disneyland, but I mean, they've learned that.
Yeah.
Because that's their competition.
I mean, that makes total sense.
Right? So, same thing with the Rotary Club. I mean, I am in a Rotary Club right now, and most of the people there are over 75. Large foundation that they put together, and part of the whole Rotary International has stopped polio. I mean, major things.
No, I know. I'm aware
right?
of Rotary right? for sure. Right. I know. It's such an amazing group.
But here's a group of people, and you were dying off. Once every couple of months, we're going to a funeral, and that number is getting smaller. And it's now I've seen leadership in the Rotary clubs like that go out and through did a great effort bring in people, but they don't stay.
Do you want to know one? I mean, I know it kind of sucks because these things are like really do good. You know, these are the organizations that shouldn't have to necessarily act like a consumer brand, but I could tell you probably the main reason why a lot of those companies are I don't want to say failing, that's judgmental, but they're struggling, is that they haven't made the fundamental shift to become a media company first, and then their cause or their action or, you know, whatever. That and then...
So let's take that on.
Yeah.
All right. So use the Rotary Club, use a church.
Yeah.
You know, and both of them have rich legacies.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they have, if it were a church, they have a liturgy. The Rotary Club has a, you know, they have their own liturgy. It works.
It totally
right?
works. Yeah.
Now, what does it mean to move from where they were in the 60s and 70s to become a media entity?
Well, there's the billion-dollar question right there. No, I'll tackle that with you. I think what it does is it requires a mental shift to say, hey, it's not just because it's the right thing to do, which is important, and that's the core. And that should remain. But it's how do we become excellent storytellers? And then when we have our stories prepared to be told, you know, like what are those stories, right? That's another thing. But knowing how to, figuring out the right stories to tell that are going to be relevant to each different group, not just age group, but the cultural groups, you know, the various, you know, regional cultural type groups, everything. And then understanding how the social, I don't even want to use digital because I think everything's digital. Digital is a weird word, but the social and real world ecosystems that they live in, and understand how these stories have to be formatted, you know, differently for each channel, and then what types of content are going to be relevant to create change or to create a true, you know, that sense of belonging, that action.
Well, all right. So to me, part of it is attraction. How do we do we attract people to have enough interest to try it out? I mean, there's something about that's interesting. I wonder what that's like. All right, so there's an attractive
totally
part, right?
Back to the identity piece again. You're back to the whole like, is it? Do I care about that? Am I? Yeah. Am I connecting
is
with
it,
that?
Is it, yeah. Does it connect with me?
Yeah.
All right. Now then, the second piece is, once I have the opportunity to try it out, then what do I get from it?
Right, yeah, because I understand, because I've been involved with a lot of philanthropic organizations, mm-hmm. and that was one of the lessons that was taught to me early on, is however you're going to help, I'm not going to name the organizations, but figure out a way to help that person get their gain, mm-hmm. because the value of that gain is exponential.
People do it because they want to.
Yeah.
Right? That to me is just the ground base that we've discovered.
Yeah.
Now, if we look back over, you know, the last 200-300 years, people did things because they wanted to avoid something.
True.
Right? If you don't come to Mass every Sunday, you're going to hell. Right? That may not have ever been that explicit, but it was communicated.
It was very well communicated to me.
Okay, good.
Let's just be clear.
All right.
That was super, super communicated to me.
So we're doing this to avoid something.
Right.
All right. Now, I don't see that selling today at all.
No, I mean, no, the fear mongering doesn't
work. I don't
work
even
much.
See drug companies being able to do that.
Oh, well, no. I mean,
you're doing this because you want to thrive.
Yeah,
You want to get beyond your rheumatoid arthritis. You want to have fun in the world. I mean, last night, Enbrel or something like that was, Mommy, can we play? And Mommy has rheumatoid arthritis. But because she's taking the drug, she can go out and play.
Yeah, you see the possibilities there.
Yeah.
It's shown.
Yeah.
Right, right.
And so, to me, people in this age are doing things because they want to. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But unless they see value, they're not going to want to walk in that Rotary Club or in either of the churches that I'm paying attention right now. And one of them is up between 405 and the 10. Century City, right near UCLA. I don't know how many people, but there are enormous numbers of apartments, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 stories high, all around this church. There are 20 old people that come every Sunday.
And that's what they say when they walk by. Because
right.
You know what? Because you know there's a certain like number that I don't know, but there's a certain number of those people that have a desire to, you know, live in sort of principle-based, you know, there's religion. You know, there's people that would definitely be the target demographic, mm-hmm. right? Who are actually care.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what they say. They say, oh, there's a bunch of old people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably, you know, like a super hip, you know, awesome bands, you know, location somewhere, mm-hmm. even if it's within 30 minutes or so away.
Mm-hmm.
That's most likely what's attracting them is the energy that, you know, mm-hmm. Like me. There's people like me here. Obviously, you know, relatability.
Mm-hmm.
Without going on, I guess I'm kind of going on a tangent there. But.
No. I mean, I think that's part of it. That's why I would stay, right? I can relate to this. I know for me, I mean, I had been in the Rotary Club when I was in South Texas back in 1974 to 1978. That was a group of people that I worked with. When I left South Texas and we went to Massachusetts, spent 12 years there, came out here, the Rotary Club was not on my list.
It was not.
Just not there. Now, when I, at one point, I felt really isolated and low. I mean, I couldn't find in Orange County, I couldn't find a community of like-minded people.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my colleagues said, well, why don't you try the Rotary Club?
Mm-hmm.
So I went, and what I found was vibes that reverberated with my 1974 experience.
That makes total sense.
So I, you know, I mean, it was things like, you know, Pledge of Allegiance and the Rotary Four-Way Test, and we are concerned about issues, about solving social issues. And that was home.
Yeah.
All right. Now, that would mean that we would be trying to figure out what home means. So how do you do that in a place like Culver City?
Oh man, I feel like you got me good. You got me good on this one. I think if those stories were, they could be told in the real world for sure. But I think if like something like Rotary or it could even be a church, understands, like really has to intimately understand the social platforms. I'm not saying that that's the only way of doing this, but and how to hyper target using those platforms. That's a mechanical way.
Mm-hmm.
But and then that's part of it. I'm just going to spray stuff here.
Sure.
Because I think there's something that's kind of at the tip of my tongue. I feel like maybe go more towards Rotary is a lot of what Rotary does, and I think it was that last statement you said about them, that they're trying to solve these, it's about solving problems, mm-hmm. right?
But for me, it was home.
Mm-hmm.
It was, this is home. This is safe. I can understand these folks. I may disagree with them.
Yeah.
Lots of Republicans in this particular, and that's not the world that I inhabit, but that was not the most important thing. What was important was it was home. There was
right.
something there that smelled, felt, tasted like home. And we were engaged in socially significant.
Well, that's events. The work that as that organization and these other organizations move forward, that's the commonality that they can create that home
mm-hmm.
for a younger generation. Because the younger generation cares about that, care about gun control, they care about climate change, they care about, I could say diversity. I could just list it. And
right.
you're going to see if I list all the stuff that young people care about, you're going to go, that's all stuff we all care about.
That's right.
It's like this list isn't
right.
that much different.
Well, that's why I was saying to you before we started that if in this church that has been there for 50 years, it's not that large, but if Jesus were to stand out on the corner and here are literally thousands of people living there, what would he see? What would be important to him? And what would draw people to him? What problems would he see that he could heal?
They'd be like, what's this dude doing out here? This world's corrupt. We don't care. And he would roll out there.
But how is that different from the world that he saw?
Nothing. Just more information being exchanged.
We
faster
just got through Holy Week. Right. And what's all that about? Here's a good man, at least a good man, and the empire kills him.
Yeah, but you know what he'd say? Like him or any figure of that would say, he'd be talking about how he's doing collabs with so-and-so and so-and-so other like-minded organizations that share an aspect of what matters to him, but also that particular group, company, individuals that he was, collabing with or working with, collaborating with, were cool. They would converge,
mm-hmm.
and then they would expand their audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I'm super passionate about. It's also like a service and a thing that I do. So of course I talk about that, but really I believe that,
mm-hmm.
I believe that they would have to have some kind of an association that was real though.
Mm-hmm.
Because now, and I'm not saying that it's Gen Z. I think like humankind has just the greatest BS detector now. It's just the way something looks or feels. You just know, or you think you know, whether it's like that's just something someone's been paid or compensated for. This is something that individual I believe is passionate about, or that organization is mm-hmm. passionate about. Like I believe when Converse tells me that they're LGBT, supportive. I believe that. Like mm-hmm. I might be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Deep down, I might be wrong. I believe that the Nikes of the world, certain team members believe in standing for something.
Mm-hmm.
you know. And I believe that, you know, certain team members there, the same, maybe different groups, are giving that same money to the NFL, and they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. Mm-hmm. I'm not afraid to say stuff like this, because I know that some of that's true. But I know that those groups of people within those organizations mean what they're doing, and I can tell, you know. And I feel like, you know, that younger generations may learn that skill quicker, because when they're 3 years old, they're switching through YouTube. But now let's bring this back.
All right, so let's take a break here and hear from our sponsors and come back, because I've got some specific questions for you about that.
Cool.
Imagine buying a newspaper and discovering that the news you're reading is 6 months old. There isn't much that stays the same for 6 months. And the same thing goes for background checks. In a time when so much outdated information is being passed around, it's good to know that People G2 offers something different. At People G2, we provide today's intelligence, not yesterday's news. Our value-added approach offers you a fully FCRA-compliant solution that includes up-to-the-minute information. By combining industry-leading technology with old-school human investigation, People G2 is able to give you information that is accurate right now, delivered quickly to our online system or integrated with your HR system. So ask yourself, are you comfortable working with old news, or are you ready for a different kind of background check company? Visit PeopleG2.com or call 800-630-2880. That's 800-630-2880 or PeopleG2.com.
So, welcome back to the Pilgrim on the 405. We're talking with Greg Witt, who is a youth marketing strategist who has deep insights into not only Generation X, but also Generation Y and Z, and whatever's coming, I'm sure he'll tackle that next. So, Greg, we were talking about how, when you talked about trust in Nike, trust in what else did you say?
Well, I used Converse, but it could be trust in anything.
But the sense of they stand for something.
Yeah.
All right, now, my experience of the Episcopal Church, my experience of the Rotary Club, they stand for lots of stuff that's very, very good.
It's deep, too.
Yes. Now, my question is, it's not a matter of converting them to significant values. The question is, will they be around in 25 years if they don't change the way that they're delivering that message, the way that they are experiencing people?
That's no different than any of the corporations or the other businesses out there. It's the same problem.
All right, so let's talk about that problem, because this is not, you know, these two organizations are dedicated to good things, good values, good beliefs, but they're dying. I mean, they're getting smaller and smaller. You don't have to say they're dying, but they're getting smaller and smaller. And my question is, over the next 25 years, what could be done to fill those organizations?
Ooh, man, I like this guy.
You're right.
Man, you know, this is a strategic planning session.
Absolutely.
Oh, I like it. I think, well, I mean, we talked about tactics for a minute before. You know, we talked about, you know, you could, you know, the holy figure or the change agent figure could collaborate with, you know, like-minded brands and organizations. And I think that that's a thing. I think that's true. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, well, there's so many things. So I think really sharing those stories of the social proof of what they're doing would have make a radical difference. I'm a very, very firm believer as well, mm-hmm. that like these businesses, these retailers, the, you know, you're saying church, you know, the Rotary, that they can, I almost said pivot, but I'm saying like they can evolve and they can change.
How about they become transparent?
Well, you know, that's super, super, super critical, because obviously that's the key.
But they
way to build that trust.
What I'm hearing is stories.
Yeah,
they become transparent
completely
with their stories.
Yeah,
I mean, what does this mean to you?
Right.
I mean, when I talk to the 20, 30 people in this small church, what are you doing in the world? They're not so much involved with the rest of the world, but what they tell me is, well, you know, we got three or four rooms up here, and we make them available to folks who otherwise couldn't afford to live here.
Yeah,
and we charge like $250 a month, which is in Culver City.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, right?
Unheard
of. We do that.
Yeah, unheard of.
We have when people struggle, but these are all insider stories.
Yeah, that doesn't fly anymore.
That's right.
Insider stories, man. It's like insider stories are on Snapchat and Instagram stories, and then they go away.
So now there's some degree to which Episcopalians and Rotarians are introverts.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Okay.
They're quiet, maybe even contemplative. And in many of their pictures of the world is, we will welcome anybody who crosses the doorstep.
Oh, that's old. That's over. Yeah, that's over.
Well, I understand.
Yeah.
And what I'm talking with you and asking you about, we understand that's over. And mm-hmm. if it's not over now, 25 years,
yeah.
it will be gone.
Gone and changing, gotten totally different.
It becomes dust.
Yeah.
All right. So my question is, what's the path to transformation?
Well, the path for transformation is that all the way back down to my five principles, you have to have an identity. Because they're authentic, right? Mm-hmm. Clearly authentic.
Oh, yes.
No issue with authenticity.
Right.
But they've got to have an identity. They've got to act in a way, look in a way, feel in a way that, I'm not going to say young people because I work with them, but that the audience cares about.
The target audience
yeah. cares about. And there obviously is a absolute critical need to have a future, feeding into whatever audience that is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the trust piece is for those organizations is more about showing because they're very trusted.
Mm-hmm.
There's really, I guess, the likelihood of there being something to not trust is pretty low. So therefore, the need to be relevant and sharing those stories and being in the right place, being where young people or where the audience is, and sharing, like you said, the transparency, what's going on. I mean, the researching that goes on nowadays, with one thumb or a finger, is critical to understand that if your organization seems mysterious, next thing you know, it's like, oh, it must just be the Masons. I don't want anything to do with that.
Right,
like, what's the Rotarians?
Yeah,
what's that?
Right,
oh, that sounds like a secret sect.
It's interesting. Some of my Islamic friends. Because Rotary is around the world.
Yeah.
And in many cases, like India and Pakistan, it is the younger people who are seeing it as a business organization to help them move forward with a community.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them say, Rotary around the world has this big question around it. Is it demonic? What is it about? But that whole thing about being transparent about this is who we are, this is what we do, and this is how you will value this.
Well, yeah, for sure. Because honestly, like, I study this stuff, and I feel like I knew before, but I can't even tell you what Kiwanis does. Like,
uh-huh.
just as one example,
right?
Like, maybe I need to go on IG and look, and maybe I just didn't look. Maybe they're killing it. I don't know. But the reality is I'm certain that Rotary, that the younger generation does not know.
Right.
Necessarily, who they are,
mm-hmm.
what they're doing, and then how to, not even how, would I, not even questioning it, but if they were, how would I relate to that? Like, what would I do? Like, what are they doing? And it's like, what they're doing, I've been a part of Rotary projects. I've seen what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a firm believer
so
in that
would,
particular
would that
organization.
Would that be stories and podcasts and videos and of
totally.
And that's just... would that be attractive?
Yeah, it would be very attractive, if the delivery of that content is in a way where it's showing also relatability with that generation being a part of it,
uh-huh,
right?
Uh-huh.
So there's nothing wrong from a strategic standpoint. There's nothing wrong with seeding a few big stories and projects, not that they would need to necessarily, but seeding that with that next generation and involving them to participate in a project to start showing other people and exposing like what we really do.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's a strategic, you know, discussion to have, right? But I think if you don't have young people already in the organization, then you need to get them there. They need to have a, you know, an amazing or a great or a transformational experience. And then we're now using our media, you know, us as a media company to share that story, be in the right places. And then, you know, now it's just tactical stuff, like in the right formats. But there is something that's important to how those stories are shared. And, you know, how are they influencing young people to be a part of it, right? You could use creators or influencers to be a part of it, but only if they're inherently involved or they're doing something to support or create that change.
And now, it seems to me that the authenticity has something to do with, on the one hand, it would be seen as inauthentic if I were doing this to fill the pews.
Yeah, that would be majorly inauthentic.
Right, or I'm doing this to rescue a dying Rotary Club.
Yeah.
On the other hand, to say this is the experience over and over again in a variety of ways, and I'm hearing a variety of platforms,
yeah,
and then maybe some breadcrumbs on the ground.
That's, you know what? Every single business, every brand, every individual personal brand all has their breadcrumbs. Uh-huh. But it's like this, and I've said this before. It's okay to have an agenda.
Uh-huh.
Everyone's got an agenda. I've got an agenda. You've got an agenda. Every business down the street's got an agenda. But just being like, this is my agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how we all win. Show me it. And be transparent about that agenda, I think,
is fine. So let's ask, let me ask.
Yeah.
When you think of specifically Generation Z, what are the ages? What are we talking about here?
Well, born roughly 1995 to 2011.
So that would be what?
24, I think, at the top.
Okay.
I mean, it depends on how you look at it.
All right, but, so let's
just say 24.
Let's look at 35 and under.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
What would be of value to them? What three or four things would they find valuable enough to get off their couch? Not that they were on the couch, but to take initiative.
Anything where there's actual actionable steps on climate change, mm-hmm, where you're doing something specific to like make a difference with all these shootings. You know, just stopping, like making just guns be, you know, I'm talking about my own opinion. I don't want to get myself in trouble, but just the idea of just being responsible.
Like climate change,
you know, gun control is an issue. Diversity, you know, is a critical issue. You know, Gen Z, they, you know, like I think our older generations, we've really, it kind of sounds bad, but have been taught to, you know, respect, you know, diversity, you know, respect different cultural ways, mm-hmm, of life, and Gen Z, they expect diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you anything with your organization is remotely like not diverse, it's just, you're swiped, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
You're a bum, done. You're done. You matter nothing.
So homeless?
Homeless, absolutely.
Hunger?
Hunger. I think sometimes if that's not really close to home, sometimes some of those causes, I think, are a little bit more tricky. There's Plan International does a lot with, with stopping, slavery. I guess sounds kind of crazy to say that, but it's true. And I think when I think of Plan International, like that, they have other initiatives, but the human trafficking, like slavery, I know is that if it's not their main, if it's not their only, it's one of their main ones. I think I've had many discussions with them. So I think one of the takeaways I could say from my conversations with that org is involving young people in the planning. So, for instance, if you were the church, if you were a Rotary, any one of the organizations that have been mentioned thus far is really, I don't want to say scouting, that sounds weird, but like finding the right cultural insiders mm-hmm. within the groups that you're looking for and finding, you know, ways to give them a not just a seat, but a voice at the table, planning what would make sense to, replenish. I don't want to say replenish, but really just attract, like you said, that appeal, but just, and it's not just pure recruitment, although recruitment's a key piece and recruitment's okay, because that's what's needed.
Well, right. Now, you talked about, you used the word transformation.
Yeah.
Now, it seems to me that the Rotary Club is a transformative experience. We don't say the four-way test every week just because that's the ritual.
Mm-hmm.
We expect that we will be not only transformed, but continually reminded of that. I mean, this is a way of living,
yeah.
right? To always tell the truth. Ask if who else is going to be involved. Is this fair to all concerned? Will this build goodwill and better friendships? Right. That's part of the transformation that we experience.
That's in perfect alignment with Generation Z.
All right. At the same time, the church is there for transformation from the self to others.
But you want to know, like, honestly, like what I hear, I work with literally thousands of young people, is when it comes to church, and it's, you know, I'll leave my beliefs aside, mm-hmm. is, hey, these priests or these people, like, do all these, like, bad, terrible sexual things. I don't want to be any part of all that stuff. I've just heard that stuff, like, unlike Rotary or mm-hmm. these other organizations, mm-hmm. the religion stigma just is like, oh, you know, the Muslims are being mistreated over here. What's going on with that? And, you know, I don't want to open up, because these aren't any of my beliefs. This, all these terrible things are happening. They cover it all up. For a lot of churches, not just, I know there's very many different churches that have a real transparency issues. Because mm-hmm. then, and I know a lot of churches are super clear about like where they spend their money and stuff like that. So it's not necessarily just transparency on where the spend is. A lot of them are, you know, amazing, you know, 501c3s and or whatever. They run the books great and all that. But I think there's just a lot of stigma.
Well, and my question is there value and will it make an impact to the culture to spend 25 years working on that? Or is that just something that will become part of the dust of history?
Oh, man, that just depends on what action's taken or not taken. I think if you're in the right place, you've got the, you know, the right heart, the right mind, the right goals for that organization, then you can stay relevant.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's definitely, like, a moral erosion that goes on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just, you just can't protect young people from, like, inappropriate, you know, age of swearing or seeing certain content. You have to teach young people context.
That's the transformation.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's really the question that I have is, when I listen to marketing folks,
mm-hmm.
this is what they are. Now, how do we get their attention, and how do we help them to consume? Now, my question is, number one, is there a transformative experience that would be valuable to them and valuable to the rest of society? Or is it just, let's attract the next group of people into our, into what we're offering?
I want to sit in the camp of believing that there's a transformative opportunity, especially with young people, because, you know, in the audiences where I specialize, you know, the frontal cortex isn't even developed yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to sit in the camp to say that, yeah, these transformational experiences can happen. It may take some bumps in the road or some massive failures for them to, you know, want to lean into that type of supportive network.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't necessarily have any of the hows at the tip of my tongue, mm-hmm. but yeah, I'm going to sit in that. I'm staying in that camp. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking it through right now.
Well, and maybe the target market for these experiences is a little older than
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Mm-hmm. I think that there is a niche group of, you know, people that are in high school-ish that, you know, are obviously in younger for sure, but it does increase when you get older because, like, home. your parents are influencing that right. from the tween and the teen standpoint. So that's absolutely, you know, potential possibility right there too. But yeah, you know, when you start, you know, early 20s, mm-hmm. you start making your own decisions, you know,
right. when you leave home and,
yeah.
and you have to make it on your own and you fail,
yeah,
or you're anxious about failing, and then there's a place to ask, what's all this mean? Should I stick around here?
Well, that's when I started asking.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this has been, you know, been a wonderful conversation for me. I really appreciate this because to me, the next 25 years, I think, will be very significant for a lot of the institutions that were very powerful and made significant contributions to the culture, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yep.
And those institutions now are wandering, and they're wondering, what do we do? What can we do? What might we do? What would be effective? They're certainly dedicated to improving social issues and dealing with you know, climate change, gun control, diversity, homeless, human trafficking.
Yeah.
That's a social justice issue. And you can change a policy, but if you haven't changed, if the heart hasn't changed, then what's the next policy?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm looking at is how do we affect the transformation? And I don't have a clear picture on what the results of that transformation are, other
right.
than more compassion, more love, more trust, more transparency, and maybe more repentance and forgiveness.
Yeah, yeah, I would say. I think that my message to any of these institutions would be to, you know, don't lump millennials or Gen Z like they're like a herd of sheep. You know, they're very individualistic and more so, at least with the Gen Z group that I'm currently most focused on, they care. I mean, the number one trait, aside of being knowledge managers, is they're purpose driven.
Mm.
And I wasn't drinking the Kool-Aid in the few years ago when I started really researching that, really kind of hearing that and wondering or observing that firsthand, secondhand, thirdhand, through the various tools and things that I do to facilitate that conversation, is I believe it now. I believe they're very purpose driven. Now, guess what? That may mean that it's the influential few that are truly, you know, purpose driven. But what I've noticed is the followership and the mindset of purpose driven is a massive trend that I don't think is gonna, you know, slow down anytime mm-hmm. soon. It's a huge, huge, if you're going to look at trends, right, some are fleeting, some can stick around. That's the trend.
But tapping into
that. That trend. That is the trend that any of these institutions that we've talked about thus far must get in alignment with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I mean, thinking about stopping polio and then looking at the anti-vax movement and the results with the measles, it's very strange.
Yeah.
Very strange. How we have actually stopped polio, but we don't want to vaccinate our children. We're confused about that.
I mean, I was up at the Gates Foundation. I yeah. just did a private tour,
yeah.
and like, oh, it was an emotional experience.
Yeah, yeah.
It really was, yeah. And to see, and I think I do remember, like, Rotary worked with them super closely, or do they facilitate
Rotary
it?
Rotary started it.
Oh, okay.
Rotary started this many years ago.
And were they the ones who facilitated everything on that localized level?
All of that.
That's just an, I literally saw, like, the entire breakdown
yeah.
of, and it was just
Rotary started
incredible.
It, and then, you know, they had various people who were contributing, and then uh-huh. Bill Gates came on in a big way.
Yeah.
And they have allowed him and put him in front because he does have a lot of credibility, and that is a transformative experience, moving from Windows to you know, just the significant contribution.
The distribution, like, innovations that I witnessed from that movement was really eye-opening to me.
Well, this has been really wonderful. If somebody wanted to talk with you more, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, if you want to follow my youth marketing and sort of just my marketing stuff, you would go to LinkedIn, Think With Wit. On Instagram, you get a little bit more of my personal side. It's also Think With Wit. And if you just want to get straight down to business, you go to engageyouth.com.
Good. And who would you like to talk to?
I like to talk to retail companies, you know, Fortune 1000, just saying, like, you know, we're not like that big, but CPGs, entertainment companies, you know, apparel, fashion brands. Any, you know, causes we always work with.
Would Edison be somebody that would be interested in you?
Possibly. Yeah. I'd have to dig under the hood.
I can introduce you to people, Edison.
Cool.
Good. Well, this has been wonderful, Greg. So glad that you were with us today.
Yeah, it's been an honor to be here, and thanks for making me think, you know.
Hey, absolutely. Well, here we are at the end of another great show with some great people in Southern California helping businesses and other social institutions thrive.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist.